This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's a Friday, Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in our Doctor in the House series in the studio with me. How are you today, George?
I'm very good. It's a very special Friday.
It is.
Well, we've got a long weekend coming up.
Yes, it is.
So I think there will be exodus of people leaving town. And of course, and it's the fantastic 62nd Merdeka or Hari Kebangsaan tomorrow.
Yes, and how do you feel about that?
I feel like it just felt like yesterday that we have half, 50 years, Hari Kebangsaan. There's a lot of excitement, patriotism, and then, change that's happening in our country.
I have mixed feelings, George, about the whole Merdeka thing. I know I was very excited after May 9th and... last year's Merdeka, I thought, was quite significant. The euphoria was still there. Somehow I feel it's not as, but you know what? We'll make the best of it anyway.
Absolutely.
So today's show is not really about Merdeka. It's about the exodus. You know, everybody's going to be leaving the city. And,
of course.
You know, we're going to be talking about road accidents. I think you've already heard our helmet promotion on the BFM
video exciting.
That's gone out. We're trying to want you to sponsor us. Helmet for a child for just 50 ringgit. Hopefully we'll be able to give out a lot of helmets to children for their own safety. So it's interesting that according to UPM Safe Kids Malaysia Executive Director, Associate Professor Dr. Kulandayan KC Money, he says only 3% of children in Malaysia wear the right size of standard children's helmet.
Only 3% that wears I would imagine that not that many people wear a helmet at all.
At all, yeah. But then again, how many times have you seen a child wearing a really big helmet? I suppose it's better than not wearing anything at all. But then again, you know, what happens if it doesn't fit well? It does lead to road deaths. And road accidents are the leading cause of death among children in Malaysia. In many other cases, these accidents cause brain injuries that can have long-term consequences on children's development. So joining us is a consultant pediatric neurologist, Dr. Wong Chee Piao. We're going to be discussing traumatic brain injuries in children. We're going to tie that back to the importance of wearing a helmet. Welcome to the show, Dr. Wong. How are you today?
Good, I think. Thank you so much for inviting me. I think I was here previously about a year ago talking about digital health. And this is another research that's quite close to my topics, to my heart. I actually did similar research in UK when I was there. I spent about 10 years in UK. And we look into traumatic and non-traumatic coma in children in the northeast of England. And when I came back, I actually analysed also looking at the traumatic brain injury in children in Selangor and FT. And we have some figure to share. So I'm looking forward to discuss about
Please
that.
Share it with us right now. I can't wait because, you know, this is so in line with what we're trying to, you know, go through with, you know, get people to, you know, be on board.
I think what you say is actually quite true in the sense that I think it's the awareness. I think we can do a lot of things to prevent head injury, a traumatic brain injury in children, but it's just that we are not doing enough, I think. And if, for example, I think when I was actually doing some of the research with some of my students, we actually analysed the trauma registry in Selangor and Federal Territory, FT, in 2010. That was actually a study commissioned by MIROS. MIROS is Malaysia Institute for Road Safety Research. And what they did actually said they record all the injury present to emergency department and look at how common it is. I think out of that, I think for that year, 2010, we have about 5,800 over children actually presented to ED with traumatic head injury. And out of that, I think you translate to about 32 per 100,000 children per year.
So what were your findings?
Right, the figure is 32 per 100,000. Worldwide is about 29. So we are 10% above the worldwide margin. So it's not the worst, but it's not good either.
Okay.
And out of that, 8, that means a quarter of them had moderate to severe injury.
Okay.
So that translates into a long-term disability. So that's how bad the situation is.
Okay. Any number is a bad number.
It is,
actually.
Right. And when it comes to protection of children, we can never do more, right? We always have to protect the children. I mean, when you come to figures like that, you know, people would just say, well, you know, children are resilient and, you know, head injuries, all children have those little tumbles, those falls, right? Okay. However, can we just kind of put things in perspective? So how many of them were actually like motor vehicle accidents, and how many are domestic falls and that sort of thing?
Okay. Yeah. I think that actually depends on age. That means actually it's related to age. Mm-hmm. What we found actually is that in the younger child, obviously, because they are not that mobile, fall remains the common cause. So right. probably about 20-30%.
Mm-hmm.
However, as you grow up the age group, between the 15 to 19, more than 80% are due to road traffic accidents.
Why that's is that? How bad the as pillion riders or obviously
and most
pillion.
Of them are motor vehicle accidents, and again relate to I think so awareness of the road safety and not wearing the proper attire, protective attire like helmet and so on. I think that's the main cause.
Okay. And you said moderate to severe injuries were pretty much, the common traumatic head injuries that you're seeing. So you have mild, moderate and severe. What does that actually mean?
I mean, that actually just tell us, reflect the severity of the injury. I think usually we use what we commonly in medical term called Glasgow Coma Score.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Glasgow Coma Score is a scale to judge your conscious level. And if you have bad injury, then your conscious level will be down. And severe means anything 8 and below. And when we look at 8 and below, means to say this child is severely ill, may not be able to breathe on his own. We have to protect the airway. We have to protect the brain. So that's how severe is severe injury.
Right. And this more severe, obviously, the less chance of survival and also more chance of long-term disabilities.
Correct. You're absolutely right. I think that's what we're looking at.
Okay. And traumatic brain injuries. What's actually happening to the brain when trauma happens?
Right. It depends on is the mode of injury. What I mean by mode of injury is that a direct impact to the brain? That means you're looking at a direct injury. Or an indirect injury means to say that the blood supply, the nerve supply, to the respiratory supply, oxygen supply to the brain. So, for example, if you have a motor vehicle accident where you hit your head and you have a bleed in the brain, that's direct injury.
Uh-huh.
But if you say you fall down, I mean, you have a road traffic accident and you puncture your lung, you can't breathe, then your oxygen supply, that is secondary injury.
Oh.
And then if you have actually you severe a major vessels, you don't get blood supply to the brain, that's a third injury. Mm-hmm. So I think these are all sort of interrelated. Obviously, we don't have one injury. Quite often, you have combination of injury in varying severity.
Okay, so the first one, what did you call it again?
So I call it, I mean, it's in a very simplistic view, it's actually a direct trauma to the brain.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So when you say direct trauma to the brain, you're looking at, for example, could the brain have actually bleed?
Mm.
That means to say that one vessel burst and get bleed.
Okay.
Or actually the brain has shaking. Because when you have actually road traffic accidents, you have the impact, the velocity.
Mm.
So you have acceleration and deceleration. So you have shearing injury. It's almost like you shake the brain violently.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. So do you see mostly direct trauma to the brain through road safety accidents among children? Is that what
usually,
you see?
Usually, if you're looking at, I mean, this is postulation, because if you look at the statistic, majority are due to road traffic accidents.
Mm.
And majority are due to motor vehicle accident, motorcycle.
Motorcycle.
And the third one actually is that most of them do not have protective helmet. When you look at that, actually when you have injury as a pillion rider, the first thing you fall, so you hit your head.
Mm-hmm.
Without the helmet to protect your brain, you get a direct trauma.
Okay, so let's talk about the brain. It sits in a cavity,
yep.
Am I correct?
Correct.
And there is actually, it is quite resilient. Mm. It has space.
You know, we have children who falls over and then, you know, a bit of rub in the head and then it's okay. But when do we know it's severe? When do we know it's not severe injury to the head?
Right, okay. Now, I think, yes, I think obviously when you say that we always have the sort of falls, minor fall, rough and tumble, that actually is how many, what's the speed, the velocity, the impact. Whereas at motor vehicle accidents, you are running at about, say, 70 kilometers per hour. Mm-hmm. Now, when you have impact, that's a deceleration. You almost double the impact by acceleration, deceleration. Just imagine you're looking at 140 kilometers per hour. Just imagine the impact. It's almost like saying taking a hammer, you hammer your what you call eggs.
Ouch.
Can your egg withstand it? You can't, you see. Whereas you drop an egg on a piece of cushion, obviously the egg won't break.
But can you explain that to me again? Acceleration, deceleration, and how did that double? Can you explain that to me
because
again?
Because when you actually going that directions, in the, I mean you're traveling at one
at
direction.
70 kilometers.
When you actually, what I call, met with a motor vehicle accident, let's say front end collisions, then there is actually a direct force against you as well. So you're going forward and there's another force behind.
Right.
So that's acceleration and deceleration.
Okay, hence the hammer and the egg.
Yeah. Just on that note of acceleration and decelerations, are children more susceptible to head injury compared to adults?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just that I think it's a no protection. That's the whole trouble. Mm-hmm. And also that maybe to a certain extent, children do not actually know how to protect themselves.
Oh, so anatomically, there is no increased risk for children to get head injury. However, obviously, lack of awareness of the importance of helmet and also children's risk-taking behavior. For example, you know, climbing out of the motorbike when it's moving and that sort of like a, you know, I wanted to use the word ignorant, but immaturity perhaps actually contributes to
it. But I always thought children had a softer skull that helps cushion you know, any sort of impact.
No, not at all. I think when you're looking at the skull, I mean, not softer skull, the skulls are equally actually hard and formed, except in the first 2 years of life. Mm. Because our skull is formed by five pieces of bone, and at birth, they are not actually joined and fused. So they are actually flexible to a certain extent. But when we look at road traffic accident, it doesn't happen in this young child.
Right.
Yeah, it happens in an older child as a plane rider.
As you said, 15 to 19 years of age.
Yes, 15 to 19, that's right.
I mean, Mira also highlighted something that is, you know, probably the skull, is, our perception is that the skull is more forgiving in some way. However, can we compare the post-traumatic recovery of adults' brain versus children's brain? I always have this preconceived idea that even with contusions for children, the recovery of the brain or the neurons in the brain is more forgiving. Is that a wrong perception?
Difficult question to answer, the reason being that it's multifactorial. You are right to a certain extent that we call it neuronal plasticity, meaning to say the ability of the neuron to actually take over the function of the part that has been lost. Meaning to say, traditionally, many years ago, we think that if we actually have a stroke and we lose our ability to speak, that's it. We lost it forever. But we know now that actually other part of the brain can take
compensate for it.
And initially, it thought it was only limited to children, but even adult, we know that there is a certain degree of ability to transfer the function to another center. Mm-hmm. But the adult is so much more limited. So what you say is correct in a sense that the children's brain, they have ability to take over much better than the adults. That's one aspect. But we also must look at children's because children are learning at the same time. It's almost like that you're building a block and then you actually try to recover as well. So if you can't, then the challenge becomes double, meaning to say that we always actually continue to develop and what we develop now forms the basis for next stage of development. And it's almost like you have to build a good foundation. And children, if they're injured young, without a good foundation, they cannot actually recover as well. So they have a double whammy in the sense that they have to build a foundation and also repair whatever damage. So in adult where supposedly we have learned most of the things that we're supposed to learn, we just need to recover.
Mm.
So in that way, that's why I say it's actually a very balanced, delicate situation whether how much you can recover, how much can you recover your foundation, how much can you build your foundations. And that actually against the better ability to recover.
Okay. We'll come back and find out more about traumatic brain injuries in children. On today's show, we're discussing the impact of, motor vehicle accidents in particular on children. That's because we want to highlight the importance of wearing a helmet. Child road safety is absolutely paramount in this country. As Dr. Wong Chi Piao has actually carried out a study with Monash University to say that, 32 out of 100,000 children per year are affected by road accidents in this country. That compares to the average of about 20. 99 to 100,000 children. Am I correct? That's not the average, or...
That's the average worldwide. I think it's a rough figure. But some country has much higher figure. But ours is actually trending on the higher side.
Okay, we'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's the eve of Merdeka and all of you heading out off the city in droves.
Be safe.
Be safe for sure. We're discussing traumatic brain injuries in children in our Doctor in the House series. We hope you put on that helmet for that child as you head out of the city. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me, and Dr. Wong Chi Piao, a consultant pediatric and neurologist. Dr. Wong has gone through some statistics of traumatic brain injuries in children or children who are affected in motor vehicle accidents. Malaysia, quite high on the world, among the world numbers. And you've also pointed out, Doctor, that the children, 80% of the children who are mostly affected by road accidents are those between the ages of 15 and 19 in this country. So let's look at that group of children. What have you observed when these children come into accident emergency? What have you observed as a traumatic brain injuries or someone who looks after pediatric neurology? Are there trends? Are there similarities? How are these children coming in? What about the parents? Are they? What are their backgrounds like?
Difficult question to answer, right?
It's actually a very difficult question.
Is it ignorance? Is it complacency?
What is it? Between 15-year-old and 19-year-old. Well, obviously, that's a time when they about to start to get license motor vehicle license.
Is it just being teenagers? Teenagers being teenagers.
Definitely, I think what we observe actually is the risk-taking behavior, and so that's why when you look at the injury. The males are affected much more than the female. Mm-hmm. I think the risk-taking behavior is always one factor to be actually considered. And so when we look at this 15 to 19, I think male predominant, and also road traffic accident and sports injury. These are two injury. Oh. And a lot is attributed to lack of awareness and risk-taking behavior. So I think that's the pattern we look at it. But personally, I observe, I think the awareness seems to be very lacking. I think I have actually mentioned about motorcycle accidents, but even with car that people think that we are safe, we are not. I think one actually said, I think we have the rules about wearing seatbelt, but how many of the children wear seatbelt?
Especially in the back seat.
Yes.
Exactly. I think, and a lot of people think that it's safe. No, it is not safe at all. In fact, what happened actually is that, again, coming back to the velocity, when you are in the forward-moving vehicle and you have accidents, the back seat get thrown forward. Mm-hmm. And when they get thrown forward, the adults don't get thrown forward all the way because of size. But children, they actually end up actually being flung to a forward and hitting their neck against the ceiling of the car and fractured their neck. And that had been a few cases.
Obviously, a traumatic head injury.
Exactly. And I have seen, actually, and unfortunately, I have actually seen a few where the baby get thrown out of the car, thrown through the windscreen and actually end up in the drain in front and comatose for 2 months.
Through the windscreen.
Exactly. Because of the force, the forward momentum. And that girl unfortunately actually end up comatose in ICU for 2 months and severely disabled. And that's not one case that I've seen.
You mean the baby survived?
The baby survived. But unfortunately, what quality of life she has? You know, and worse still, actually, it was actually not through the fault of his parents because they were actually traveling on the right direction, but the other car overtaking on the other, going to the wrong lane and get a head-on collision. Mm. But because she wasn't strapped up properly, she actually paid the price for that, which is very unfortunate.
So it's just not the helmets in the car. Yeah. You need to wear the seatbelt.
And the other one actually said, I thought a bit, many people think that it actually is quite trendy and you have a sunroof and you see the head popping up from the sunroof. And that's ridiculous. That's really ridiculous.
That's quite scary usually when you see the branches.
Explain to me what happens when you stick your head out of the sunroof.
First of all, it means to say
because I'm thinking, what's the big deal? The only, maybe a stone might, get displaced and, might hit you. But what could possibly happen? What else?
What could happen? First of all, you are not strapped. So you're mobile. You're almost like an egg in a basket where you're swinging the basket, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, what will happen?
Oh, that's an interesting analogy.
Yeah. Exactly, right? Okay. Then, and also that when you have your head up with your neck somewhere just above the roof, just imagine if you get flung forward and you hit your neck against the roof.
Mm.
It's almost a decapitation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Decapitation. So can you say, well, I hope I will never see that, but can you see it's possible on that, you say? And then you get flung off. The car actually turtles, right? And your head will be squashed.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned about motor vehicle accident. We mentioned about backseats, passengers. We mentioned about children being passengers in motorbikes. But the other thing which I see quite a lot in foreign countries, but not necessarily in our Malaysian roads, are children who are on their pedaling bikes, but actually not wearing helmets, because not many people on pedaling bikes actually wear helmets.
Bicycles
in foreign countries like Australia, virtually everybody insists on wearing the bicycle helmets, right?
Correct.
So can you elaborate a little bit from your statistics. What sort of accidents do you see from people, in pedaling bikes, push bikes, actually not wearing helmets?
No, we don't have that, unfortunately. We don't have the statistic. But I think almost invariably, I would say a high proportion. Because how many of us actually in the garden seeing a young child cycling wearing a helmet? Not many at all.
Virtually none. Right?
You know, in this country, it's rather weird. I've seen children, parents who take the trouble to buy a helmet and ankle guards and, whatever else, knee guards and all of that. And, they get laughed at.
Exactly.
Because it's not cool in this country. Come on, just ride the bike. Who cares? You don't need to wear a helmet.
A lot of people think that this will not happen. The chances is low. But if it happens, it's catastrophic.
Yeah.
I think that's what people don't realise.
Are you for bringing down the age of children who can get their motorcycle licence? I think it's 16?
It's 17, I think. I stand corrected, but I think 17.
17 is driving.
I thought cars is...
17, then it's 16.
Then. 16, yeah. I've got two teenage children. Well,
yeah, all right.
Who's actually obviously very keen to get the car license, but not so keen to get the motorbike.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's a kind of blessing in disguise for me. Obviously, motorbikes accident is quite a scary thought because I had one myself before. Almost killed me with a ruptured spleen and a torn liver. And
that was because of a pothole.
It's because of a pothole, but... Regardless of what it is, compared to a car where there's all that safety protection of the airbags, the seat belts and everything, but in a way, nobody ever wears, the protection guards or leather jacket, to protect you from getting all these injuries and graze on the road. And then that itself, almost killed me. And because of multiple infections of the skin. And so I know for sure it's kind of like in a region of about 16 to, 16 years old. And like what Mira said, do you think any kind of legislations might be deterrent for younger risk-taking behaviour?
Well, difficult. I think it's actually awareness. I think it's a maturity and awareness. I think coming back to the seatbelt, it's actually a mandatory thing that we must wear seatbelt. But how many of us still taking a chance?
And enforcement is
so I think
great.
It's awareness. I think we have the law is there to actually sort of compel us to do certain things, the right thing. But it's whether we are aware and we want to
and
do
also
it.
Enforcement.
Enforcement is an issue, I think. That's the one that's a bit difficult. I think left much to be desired.
So let's talk about treatment options. I mean, I know it probably varies from mild to moderate to severe traumatic brain injuries. Just very quickly, what are some of the possibilities?
So before I go into treatment, I think I also like to bring one not so comforting news in the sense that doesn't mean that if you have mild injury, you'll be okay. No, it doesn't mean. There is actually a lot of research show that there's what you call minimal mild dysfunction, brain dysfunction following mild road traffic accidents. And I have actually seen a few cases, medical legal case, where the children was knocked down by a car and appears to be to have very mild injury but suffer catastrophic psychological problems, learning and so on, which was not apparent and it's not in keeping with the injury. So I think don't think that if you have mild injury, you'll be fine. So I think that's the one that I'm sorry, but It's a mild injury can have severe
and that
consequences.
Can be a permanent situation.
Yeah, I think the few cases I've seen actually they struggled. I think they struggle in school and study, and they actually is essentially they actually fail to keep up.
So it's not just it's cognitive it's development; yet. It's everything.
And they don't have the sort of immediate danger to their life, but the psychological. A consequence shows up after a few years,
you see.
And these are the ones that will never achieve their full potential in life in future.
What are some of your challenges in treating traumatic
brain injuries?
Right,
okay. So coming back to the treatment, I think obviously the treatment, we look at twofold. So I think one actually, obviously, is a physical treatment. That means to say whatever injury you have, we treat the injury.
Such as surgery and that
Yeah,
sort.
That's right. If you have a major bleed in the brain, we stop the bleed and so on. And we support the respiration if you have a lungs injury and your blood vessels is affected. If you hemodynamically unstable, we support that. So I think that is actually the physical injury, the support. And that actually is what most George will tell you that. I think that's what we actually have been doing that for years.
Mm.
I think the increasing awareness actually is that besides physical, we have psychological, recovery that we must not overlook, I think. And that's the one that I think we are still playing catching up, I think, in Malaysia.
Okay.
That I think the awareness actually is that because a lot of parents say, yeah, I think my child has severe injury. Can he walk again? But to them, physical recovery is apparent.
Mm-hmm.
But what they don't realize, just like what I mentioned about the minimal brain dysfunction, is that they actually now have long-term learning difficulty.
And it's as you said, it's double whammy for the child.
Exactly.
See, George was all right. He fractured his spleen. I'm monitoring in terms of personality changes.
Yes, personality changes. Yeah. It's subtle.
Still all right.
His brain has matured.
Right, yes.
Has achieved the full potential.
Well, that's arguable.
Not, we will see. You know, until you go to second childhood.
That's why I didn't talk about brain development. I looked at personality changes.
It's still developing.
I think then that's the one that I find most disturbing.
Which is horrible.
And we found from my research in Newcastle in UK is that the one that caused most problem to the child and to the carer is not physical disability. It's the psychological disability, the behavioral difficulty, the learning issue and so on. These are the ones that cause the most problem.
Mm.
And in fact, actually, from my own study, I did a study on non-trauma. I think that's the other end. That means to say those children who suffer non-traumatic injury, and we find the same thing as well, that actually the physical recovery is the least of the problems. Is the learning, is the psychology of behavior issue that the parents have difficulty coping with and the child had difficulty coping with, and that's the one the most disabling.
Mm. Okay.
Mira, a few weeks ago, we did a show with the neuropsychiatrist, essentially highlighting that a lot of these long-term impacts on psychological and behavior can be quite subtle, and then early intervention itself can actually ensure better recovery for the children and adults.
So it's a multidisciplinary approach when you,
absolutely,
as far as the child is concerned.
Absolutely. I think from the medical point of view, then we will support the physical injury, then we probably will have to bring in the other paraclinical expert to manage, for example, the psychological problems, the speech and language problems, the other learning issues, and the behavior issue as well.
Okay, so physical rehab is not the only thing.
That's right. That's
which
right.
We would almost always think about first, isn't it? Physical
rehab. That's what apparent. I think when you have a child that's very ill, the first question is that will he ever walk again? Mm. That's what most parents think about. But then the next thing actually is that when he walked, what is the next one? You know, then that's where he hits at that he has more disabling difficulty than just physical.
How do you help families cope with this?
Right, I think, first of all, one actually is to be upfront to see what injury they have. I think rather than to hide it, I think that's the first thing. And also not to assign blame because mistake has been committed. If, let's say, for example, due to lack of awareness and so on, I think we can talk about that later. But now the child is our concern. Let's support the child. So what we normally do actually is give the parents and say, this is an injury that we notice, and physical injury is this, and then maybe the psychology will come in later. We will support, this is what we're going to do. But then we have to be mindful that there will be other problems so that the parents are not caught by surprise if some other thing crops up. And we also have to give a time frame in the sense that, for example, physical injury is quite apparent. You can support the child will recover. But how much you recover, how fast you recover, and when will we say, that's it, you cannot recover anymore. These are all the things that we have to support them. So I think, roughly, we say that actually usually the major recovery will witness it about within the 6 months following the injury. And then after that, up to 2 years, the child will still continue to recover. By 2 years, we are looking at possibly majority of recovery. I think if you force me to give a number, I will say about 90% of the recovery, and after that is bonus. Mm. So you actually give the expectation to the parent so that they know. Because sometimes I think when this type of catastrophe happens, I think we go through five phases. We go to denial, anger, grief, acceptance finally. And so we have to manage that with the parents. So giving a realistic expectation and not make it too optimistic, neither too pessimistic, I think probably the best way forward, and help them to come to ultimately acceptance of the injury.
What has been the most difficult case you've had to deal with? As in road accident and your job as a consultant pediatric neurologist for children?
I think the most difficult one has been the stress on the parents, I think, that and especially parents who have unrealistic expectations that the child will recover fully. And so I think that, as I mentioned to you again, that I think there will be some degree of denial, then anger, then rationalize, and they will start bargaining and say, if I do this, will you give my son back again? Ultimately, they will accept it. Mm. Parents who doesn't go through the phases are the one that had a lot of issue.
Mm-hmm. Who are just stuck in one phase.
Yeah, they're stuck in one phase. They cannot actually let it off go. And that's the one that I find most difficult. And I have some parents continue seeking answer, seeking treatment. And unfortunately, seeking treatment making them vulnerable, because when they don't accept, they will try everything. Mm. And then unfortunately, there will be a lot of unscrupulous people out there trying to make a quick bucks out of them. Mm. You know, and that's where the difficulty is. And we also have achieved very good evidence and say that if the parents do not accept and do not go through the phases to ultimate acceptance, the children suffer as well. I think that's actually quite good example. One of my medical students actually came across, and he wrote in his reflection to me and said, I saw two children with learning disability, and one parent has refused to accept it and continue to seek answer for it and never do anything. And the other parents accepted this is a problem and get on with it, get all the help the child need, and the child did so much better than the one that parents refused to accept. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where I'm looking at actually. So I think I've seen both, that parents accepted and some have not. And the one that have not is the one with my biggest challenge.
So that would determine speed of recovery and everything
else. Ultimate functioning and whether the child recovered to whatever potential they have now.
Mm-hmm. You know? Actually, I mean, on that basis, obviously you highlighted the medical students' reflections and the study that you've done. I mean, coming back to the original statement that you made about the data that you collected in Malaysia, I mean, we go back a long way in Monash.
Yep,
and of course, you know, I respect your data. And I find it just a little bit too optimistic to think in Malaysia we only have 10% higher than the global average of the accidents in children, right? Do you think that might be underestimating because in the reporting of head injuries amongst Malaysians may not be as robust in compared to, let's say, UK, where you were taking the collections of data from Newcastle?
Definitely. I think what you say is spot on, in the sense that one of the pitfalls that we have actually is underreporting. Right, that's the one that will actually make the figure unrealistically optimistic, like you say. Yes, if you ask me, Malaysia probably will be at least, I think, maybe 20 or 30% higher than that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Yeah. You know. I mean, the other thing that I would like to highlight is that the ones you see are the ones who are brought to hospital. Mm-hmm. But there must be many, many, I hate to say, fatality on the road after the head injury, right? Okay, do we have even any record of that sort of like children fatality? The ones don't get to you.
Due to brain injury.
Correct.
Probably not, but then I think we are looking at, I think, Selangor and FT. So these are relatively developed state. right? In a rural area, I think it can be difficult because the death can be certified by people other than non-medical. Mm-hmm. So in Selangor and FT, yes, I think we probably will get fairly good reporting because most of them will end up in the hospital. Right, whereas in the peripheral, I don't know.
Even dead on arrival, you will have the statistic capture in your study.
Yes, I think that's the beauty of the register, because that register was actually started by a trauma physician and who is now based in Sungai Buloh Hospital, a good friend of mine, Dr. Sabaria, mm-hmm. and she actually painstakingly keep all the data of the ED attendance, and death would have gone to the ED first.
Wow. Yeah. Because those data are crucially important
so
for us to plan.
That year that I quote is the only year that we have very comprehensive data because MIROS wanted a good data to talk about road safety.
All
and
right.
They commissioned that year and they paid particular attention to that year. So that year collection was quite good. Just for MIROS, you may not actually familiar what we call register. Register actually is a record of certain conditions in certain countries. For example, if I'm interested in road traffic accident, then we have a road traffic accident register. So any road traffic accident will be registered on the register. So that's actually a record keeping so that we can go back and study about it. And that actually, as Josh said, I think it depends on reporting as well. If people don't report, you don't get the number.
So is the private sector also supposed to report?
Yes, that's right. I think, and that's the participation is the one not as good as what Josh said, mm-hmm. I think the participation, so some of the number actually is under-reporting rather than actually over-reporting. And so in that year, 2010, MIROS were particularly actually active in getting this statistic. And so they actually participate with this register administrator, who is Dr. Sabara company and the team. And so they have very good report. Mm. In fact, that's the one that actually, the reason why I come to get hold of this register is because we want to look at what other facilities to help them recover.
Oh.
Because that was actually my passion at the time. We were talking about how we can use virtual rehabilitation to help children with brain injury to recover. But we want to know what is the demand. And so when we speak to Dr. Sabara, he said, yes, this year is the best year that you have the data, fairly as complete as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still not good, maybe 25 to 30% underreporting, okay. But good enough in Malaysia.
Mina, okay. I have just one question to follow on to that. Do you think that it was 9 years ago, 2010, do you think we are now better or worse than 2010 in the current status? Just a gut feeling. Obviously, the data is not there.
Yeah, you're talking about awareness?
No, talking about fatality and brain injury statistics prevalence.
Right, okay. Now, you only have to look at all the Op Jalan Raya that during a festive season, it has not gone down. It has gone up. What does that tell you?
Mm. Okay.
Right, that answers the question.
Yes, it does. We'll come back and find out more about the importance of helmets. I mean, if a lot of our children are not wearing helmets, number one, and number two, they're not wearing the right sized helmets, what does that mean for traumatic brain injuries? Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me, together with Dr. Wong Chi Piao, a consultant pediatric neurologist. We are discussing traumatic brain injuries in children. As Dr. Wong has alluded to, road traffic accidents account for a huge number of deaths of children amongst the age of 15 and 19 in this country, 80% actually from road traffic accidents. So, I know we're according to University Putra Malaysia, Safe Kids Malaysia Executive Director, Associate Professor Dr. Quilindayan KC Money, he says only 3% of children in Malaysia wear the right-sized children's helmet. What happens when you don't wear the right size?
It's actually the cushioning of the fall, I think. Because when you don't wear the right-sized helmet, then you leave a space between your brain and the helmet. And that itself actually will allow the brain to actually violently shake, break, or hit something, right? Because the helmet is built such a way that there's a level of cushions surrounding it. So you have to wear it snugly so that the cushion is maximal. If you don't, then you defeat the purpose. Mm-hmm. It doesn't serve the protection.
So, okay, so that will that, that
answers, basically,
is it any protection at all? Or does it work against you?
It doesn't work against you, but the protection is minimized significantly.
Because there is a misconception that, you know, when children put it on, you know, it actually, rather than protecting them, actually, causing more harm. How do you array that sort of like misconceptions of people thinking that children wearing helmet actually is not really protective? It's only, some people even think that it might cause more harm.
A bigger helmet than
the issue. And I'm quite surprised with that perception, because I think there are tons of research to show how beneficial it can be. Mm. And just wearing helmet could mean life and death.
I mean, the thing is that when you see motorbike vehicles in Malaysia, I mean, it's like not even in rural countries, you see sometimes in the morning that the father drives like 2-3, you know, or I say drive, but ride 2-3 children in one motorbike to school. And then you're hard-pressed to see one of them put on a helmet. And then on top of that, my perception is that children under 15 shouldn't even be a passenger, because the seats are too big and they are moving around and then they get flown out as soon as there's a fall or something like that. And there's no legislations that actually prohibit children from being a passengers of
a pillion rider.
That's right, yeah.
No,
but they don't have a choice, George. No,
yeah. I think that's a reality in the sense that the mode of transport, and given our economic status, what can we afford?
I think we
are lucky in the sense most of us can afford a car, but some don't. And they have to move. Yeah. I think best you can do it? Motorbike. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah. On that basis, the things that we can obviously change is the at least fitting helmet suitable for children, isn't it? Don't you think that's the right thing?
That's one thing. I think that's the absolute minimum that we can do. I think that, coming back to what George you say, actually, is that I think over passenger, that means I have seen four on a motorbike. I think, right, it's only allowed in circus, not on the road. Right? Okay. So I think that the motorbike is built for two people, the rider and the pillion rider. That's about it. Mm-hmm. You know. But whether you are poor or rich, I think you have to think about consequence. I think that goes a lot into education. That way to tell our parents, yes, we understand that life is difficult, that you want to rush in, bring all your children to school, but if anything happens, you're going to regret for the rest of your life.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think it's awareness that...
It is awareness. I think that there's a lot of awareness lacking. A lack of awareness in Malaysia about the safety. What can we do? And what people think is that it cannot happen to me. And it will not happen to me.
Mm.
The risk is so little. Because you say 32 per 100,000.
So those are, awareness amongst the parents, right? Well, do you not think that teaching children at a very young age about the brain and what happens when the brain is affected? Because I understand there's a program in the UK they're coming up with a curriculum with the Neuro Institute or whatever to bring about awareness for children in school.
And
that leads to the importance of wearing a helmet.
Yeah, that's right. If the adults like Josh can't understand, we teach Josh children to teach Josh.
Exactly.
In a sense that, right? We teach the children so the children demand safety. Right? And that's one thing. So that they actually safeguard themselves. At the same time, we use the children to educate the adults. That's quite important. Mm-hmm. In fact, that will be one prong. And we still have to continue actually educating the adults, I think. Sometimes actually it's just a little bit more persuasions. I think rather than we prescribe and tell the adult you can't do it, being quite dictatorial. Mm-hmm. I think some adult will just say, well, who are you to tell me what to do? Mm-hmm. Right? So we just have to persuade them gently and tell them that, look, this is how it should be done. And plus the children coming in, I think that's probably two-pronged attack.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we have this helmet safety campaign going on now, hoping that people will donate 50 ringgit towards a child's helmet and hopefully we'll be able to give out more helmets to children to wear. Then, I had some people ask me, yes, we can donate the money and we can buy these helmets and pass them around, but will they actually wear it? That's another sense of awareness that needs to come about, that, these children need to wear the helmet.
That's right. I think, again, psychological. If we can actually tell them that it's cool to wear a helmet.
Uh-huh.
How can we do that? To, like the children say, it's cool to wear a helmet. It's almost like Ultraman, Superman, they have a helmet. If the children want to wear the helmet, that's it, the answer is. I mean, we have the answer.
Second phase of the campaign.
That's yes, it. That's make right. it cool.
Let's get the helmets to them first, and then we'll figure out how to make sure they
So Mira, obviously, this is a great campaign for great cause, you know, run by, championed by BFM. So how do people get involved if they want to donate?
Okay, so it's very easy. All of this week, we're highlighting children's road safety, but particularly the importance of the kids' helmets, right? So you can sponsor today for just 50 ringgit. You need to log on to bfm.my/helmets. That's all you need to do. You can go online and donate 50 ringgit.
And then you can, well, you know, if that helmet is worn by one kid, then that obviously you can potentially save a life.
Yes, and remember, exactly, according to UPM, the Safe Kids Malaysia, only 3% of children in Malaysia wear the right sized standard children's helmets, just 3%.
And many of those 3% perhaps is because of resource restrictions that they actually don't have access to the helmet. Right. Therefore, a good cause like this, you know, should actually have more people having access to a helmet.
I mean,
that is
50 ringgit is a lot of money for some people.
Indeed.
Right.
That's right, but not to some.
Yeah.
And those who can afford it, please donate. I think that's actually to a good cause.
Yeah. So what else what would you like to leave us with, Dr. Wong, as far as traumatic brain injuries in children is concerned?
Right. I think that traumatic brain injury in children is potentially preventable. I think it's the lack of awareness whether we want to do the right things. I think that's the only message I have. I think helmet is one good thing, and the safety precaution we take, don't override, don't carry too many passenger. I think ride at the right speed and know your limit. I think these are all the issues can prevent traumatic injury. Remember that we want a children to grow to maximize their potential, and they are our future. Right, they are going to take over from us, and our retirement depends on them.
There you go.
There you go.
Said like
there
a true doctor in his, you know, the sandwich generation, probably, Dr. Wong, you know. Your message to the parents?
For the parents, I think that you have a responsibility for your children. I think if you can, do the right thing, right? If there is actually advice, seek the right advice and wear the right helmet. Don't carry too many children. Know your limit.
Well, in the spirit of Merdeka Tomorrow, you know what I'm going to say? BFM, I wish Malaysia stands for Bike Fatality Free Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. So to donate 50 ringgit only, just log on to bfm.my/helmets. Come on, do your part. I'm sure it'll help a child somewhere in this country to stay safe. Thank you both very much for joining us, and happy Merdeka to all of you. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, and Dr. Wong Chi Piao, a consultant pediatric neurologist, speaking to us about traumatic brain injuries in children on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.